Fox Sports at 650. It's Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drantz live from the Kintech studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. The Bridge Street Dunbar Lumber in Ladner has moved to Progress Way in Tilbury's Industrial Park. More room, more product, more awesome. Details at dunbarlumber.com. Now joining us on the phone, he is the play-by-play voice of the Vancouver Canucks here on Sportsnet 650, our pal Brendan Batchelor. Batch, what's going on, man?
Good afternoon, guys. How are you?
We're doing very well. It's a little bit of time off here between Canucks games, but certainly no shortage of things to chat about with the team. And we can start with some of the news today. The team recalling Max Sasson, sending down Jonathan Lekkomäki back to Abbotsford. What did you make of Lekkomäki's first stint in the NHL with the Canucks?
Yeah, I think there were some really good signs, especially early. Tremendous for him to score his first NHL goal and have an impact that way and play up the lineup and play on the first power play unit and get that experience and understand what it's going to take for him to be successful in that role. At the same time, I think it's still clear that there's some room for growth. And with the way the lines are being deployed at the moment or were deployed the other night, I think if he's going to be playing a bottom six role, then I'd rather have a guy like Max Sasson in there who can kind of embody that identity that they might want down the lineup and can play at different spots in the lineup, whether it's on the wing or in the middle, and get Lekkomäki back down to Abbotsford and get him some minutes and opportunity to continue building his confidence, especially from an offensive perspective.
So you are one of the two pronunciation authorities in the market. Is it Sasson or Sasson?
It's Sasson.
All right. That's Rick Dhaliwal has led me astray, predictably. He was saying Sasson, so I said it.
Who would have thought that that would happen?
You
were trusting Rick on name pronunciation?
I have no one to blame but myself for this one. No one to blame but myself for this one. Anyways, Max Sasson up with the Canucks right now. Looking ahead to this six-game road trip here. Six-game road trip, Batch. And, obviously no JT Miller. We don't know Brock Besser's status. We don't know Thatcher Demko's status for this road trip. So still shorthanded for the Canucks, at least, for the foreseeable future here. We've seen some glimpses from Elias Pettersson, but is it fair to say that, this is the type of stretch where he needs to step up and be the best player on the ice, at least in some of these games, to help the team kind of tread water here?
Yeah, I think so. Whenever you lose a top player or have multiple top players out of your lineup, it adds pressure on everybody on the roster, but that pressure is amplified for the other guys that are up the lineup. Mm-hmm. Because if you're Pettersson, you're going to get more matchup minutes, especially on the road where they don't control the last change. It's going to be more difficult for you, and you're going to have to try and overcome that and produce for this group anyway. And, this is also highlighted by the fact that Pettersson was already the club's leader in ice time amongst forwards even before Miller went out. So, that role is going to grow. I would imagine his deployment could grow and he could play even more minutes through some of these stretches. The pressure's on him, on Quinn Hughes, really on anyone that's on his line. So Jake DeBrusk, is in the crosshairs right now, I think, as well to a certain extent, because when you're missing two-thirds of what is regularly your top line, then everybody has to pull on the rope to try and cover for that. But the pressure and the focus especially is highlighted on the guys at the top of the lineup like Pettersson.
Now, Batch, I don't know if you're one of those legions of people practicing, the mindfulness methods of getting to sleep quickly by, watching 200 four-second videos inches away from your face. On Instagram and Snapchat, how they do those blind rankings where it's like, yeah, people give you five things and you have to fill it in 1 to 5, 1 being most likely, 5 being least likely, but you don't know which way they're coming. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So that's what we're going to do here. You're going to blind rank the following five things. And here's the rules. The rules are, I'm going to ask you 2 weeks from now. Okay. We're talking about how the Canucks not just held the fort, but had a successful six-game road trip while shorthanded. Most likely being 1, least likely being 5. Rank the following guys in terms of, let's call them step-up tiers. These are step-up tiers, guys who have stepped up to help the Canucks succeed in spite of their many absences. You ready to go?
I'm ready to go. Let's do it.
All right. Let's start with Jake DeBrusque.
Yeah, that's interesting. Because I've got the board open, I'm going to leave myself with wiggle room and put him right in the middle at number three. Because I think
smart. That's
he
what
has
I
a
done.
Chance. He has a chance to have a great impact if him on that line with Pettersson, you know, really goes off and he can produce and score a bunch of goals for them. But I think there are other players on the roster that have a chance to be more impactful. So we'll start with DeBrusque at number three.
I'm going to savvy play from Batch.
Very
savvy play.
I'm throwing two names at you as one because they're conjoined. Soucy Myers. Carson Soucy and Tyler Myers.
Ooh, that's a tough one.
The pair.
This is the problem here is, you know, if they play well, they'll be a big part of the success, but I want to leave one and two open now that I've taken three away. So, in fact, in hindsight, putting DeBrusque at three kind of put me in a tough spot, and I think you probably knew I was going to do that and designed it intentionally this way, knowing you. But I'm going to put them at number two, just because I think, you know, them getting back to being the kind of pairing that we know they can be and defending the way that we know they can defend would make a massive difference for this club, especially you're on the road. You know, maybe they face some more of the matchup minutes if teams are trying to get their best players away from Quinn Hughes. And ultimately they're a key part of this team. They're two of the top four defensemen. So I'm going to take number two off the board with Myers and Soucy, and I'm going to hope that I don't regret it.
Pugh Suter.
Five.
Good play. Good play.
Really? And, if they get useful secondary scoring?
It depends how he's utilized, right? Like, he's been a top six winger to this point, and as a result, he's scored a lot of goals and had a big impact. But if they need to cover up for the lack of Miller down the middle, then he's going to get moved down the lineup and as a result have less of a chance to have an impact in that regard. And if I'm not mistaken, he was off the first power play unit last game as well. So those are the factors that lead me to say five for Pugh Suter, and I'd be happy to be wrong. So I guess that leaves me one and four, right?
Yeah. Connor Garland.
It has to be one, but I'm scared of who you're going to give me after.
No, it can't be one, because you know who's coming last. It can't be one.
Do I?
I've absolutely
this
jigsawed this.
Exactly.
You want to play a game.
This is the problem, is I fully believe that Drance will change who he's going to give me for number five based on where I put Garland.
Absolutely not. There's only one player that I could be bringing up next.
Okay, well then.
And it is, of course, Teddy Blueger.
Well, that's the point. Is I'm going to put Garland at four, and it's going to be Teddy Blueger. But if I put Garland at one, then it's going to be Quinn Hughes.
I hope we get a hilarious answer at number one so we can like put out the clip. Like, Batch says, Ratu must step up on six-game road trip.
Well, you know what? I'm going to put Connor Garland number one anyway because I think he's been their most important play driving forward. I think his role and his minutes have been elevated this year even before some of these injuries and absences. And I think as of this moment, he has been their best play driver. So I have to put him at number one, even if the ranking isn't going to look awfully good at the end of this afterwards.
Last one, Elias Pettersson.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to have him higher. In a perfect world, I would have him at number two, I think, behind Connor Garland. But I guess I've only got four left, so I've got to put him at four. But, you know, a lot is riding on this road trip for Pettersson, as I already talked about, and the pressure will be on him, and he's trending in the right direction in terms of his game. So now that they're away from home, can he take that responsibility on his shoulders and kind of take that mantle and go forward with this group? That's going to be a big question from this road trip. And I don't want to put him at number four, Thomas, but I have to.
I was thinking about this on my seawall walk today, which I kept referencing all my private thoughts on my seawall walk today.
You're deep in thought.
Deep in thought on this seawall walk this morning. And I was thinking a lot about Pettersson and the line between performing well the way he did on Tuesday night against the Rangers and being the reason the team wins games. which I think he needs to be on this upcoming road trip. How confident are you that Pettersson can sort of step up and be the reason this team wins games on this road trip?
I'm confident that Pettersson can step up and be the reason that this team wins games. I am less confident that he can step up and be the reason that the team wins games on this road trip based on the body of work this season to this point. And again, I would be happy to be proven wrong in this scenario, but you know, as much as his game has trended in the right direction, I think we've all on these airwaves talked about the fact that we haven't seen that supernova, like take over the game Pettersson performance that we know is there. And you know, as much as I want to give him a lot of credit for finding his game again, for being more involved both with and without the puck and producing a little bit more, we haven't seen one of those games in quite a while now. So, you know, do I think he's capable of it? Yes. Do I think he's capable of it eventually? Yes. Do I think saying to him, you've worked really hard on your game, it's trending in the right direction, but guess what? Now everybody's injured. It's all on you. Go out and do it. Is the best way to get that out of him? I don't necessarily think it is. So, we'll see what happens on the trip. Hopefully his game continues trending in the right direction to the point that he is able to have that level of impact, but we haven't seen that game from him yet this year. We probably haven't seen that game from him since January, if we're being completely honest. So I would like it to happen now, and I think he will get back to being that player. I'm just not as confident in the short timeline of within the next 2 weeks.
Is it unfair for me to be looking at this and thinking, what I want to see from Pettersson isn't just to dominate play 5-on-5 or score some goals or key the power play? Like, I want to see him step into some of what you expect from like the inspirational leader of a team in terms of how he carries himself on ice. Is that unreasonable of me? Am I being unreasonable to say, I think that's what this team needs? I think he's the only guy who can do it. Up front anyway. And that's kind of what I want to see over the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, like to a certain extent, it's not unreasonable because he's your best forward on paper, your highest paid player. And that's kind of what you expect from a player of that level. At the same time, the turn of phrase that comes to mind is a leopard can't change its spots. And, you know, there are times where Pettersson has been that player, but it hasn't been consistent. And we don't talk about him as the emotional leader or as the heartbeat of the team or any of these phrases that are used about guys like JT Miller. So to ask that of him when it may not be in his makeup to be that guy, I don't know if it's fair.
I think that makes sense, Batch. And I mean, probably the most inspirational thing he can do is play really well, right?
Like, yeah.
And then leave the rah-rah stuff to the other guys who are better suited to it. But I mean, I think the other players would probably be pretty inspired if he goes out and, you know, dominates against Ottawa and has 4 points and they win, right?
Yeah, and, you know, we could talk about Quinn Hughes in this scenario too, because I don't get the sense that Quinn Hughes is the biggest, like, rah-rah bang the drum guy in the room either. I think he's trying to grow into that now that he's the captain, and maybe he'll become that kind of leader eventually. But what does Quinn Hughes do in terms of his leadership style? He just goes out and is the best player on the ice almost every night. And that's a way to lead too. So that's what I would expect more from Pettersson. Like we've all covered Pettersson for years now. I don't see him being the guy to stand up in the dressing room and give like an any given Sunday speech to this group. But I see him having more intensity in his game. I see him competing at a higher level. I see him having the potential to produce offensively as a result of those things. So that's what I'd be looking for from Pettersson. Is I don't need the rah-rah emotional stuff because that's just not who he is. I just need him to go out and impact the game in as great a way as he possibly can. And if he does that, then he's going to drag his teammates into the fight. His line's going to produce and play well. And that's going to be as important, if not more important than, you know, whether he's a rah-rah guy who, you know, slams his stick on the ice and tries to fire up his teammates. Because I just don't think he has that in him.
On Jake DeBrusk, Batch, who is on this list of guys who need to step up as well. And, you know, it's interesting because the... What?
No, I'm just... laughing about the idea of like looking around.
PD and, doing the Any Given Sunday
well,
speech?
Yeah.
Like, it would be sick if he got up and did it. That'd be fantastic.
You got to look at the guy next to you. Look into his eyes.
It's a game of inches.
Yeah. And I think you're going to see a guy who will go that inch with you.
Yeah.
Sorry.
The only thing
you got me too fired up.
It's from the coaches. The part I always, the part I love the best is where he's like, "I can't do it for you. I'm too old," which wouldn't make as much sense coming from Brady, but
I've made some mistakes in my life.
Oh man, now I want to watch that movie. Anyways,
but
chased off anyone who's ever loved me.
I could see Rick Tocchet giving that speech.
Absolutely, absolutely, 100%.
Either we heal now as a team, or we will die as individuals.
That's good. I like that. I like that. Well, maybe a little over the top, but I like it.
That's a good movie.
On to Brusque. On to Brusque. It's interesting because I think the early returns on that trio, right? Pettersson, Sherwood, and DeBrusque, they've been controlling play. They've been generating chances. Sherwood's been producing. Pettersson's been producing. But it hasn't translated to DeBrusque producing. Is it just a matter of time? Like, if that trio stays together and they keep doing what they're doing, is it just a matter of time for DeBrusque? Or are you seeing other things that he needs to correct to start being more productive?
Yeah. Well, it's hard for me to analyze this because Jake DeBrusque played in the Eastern Conference until now. So, you know, I saw Jake DeBrusque highlights. I watched a handful of his games every year. But I was not by any means a Jake DeBrusque expert. So what I would say from watching him during the start of his Canucks tenure is too perimeter and a little bit mercurial, right? Like not getting to the hard areas, not scoring the kind of goals that maybe I thought he would score. He's still a very skilled player who has a great understanding of the game and an ability to make plays and to score goals. I think we've seen that in limited stretches. But I want him, you know, like Rick Tocchet talked about JT Miller being the FU of their team. Yep. I want more FU from Jake DeBrusque, and I haven't seen it to this point. Now, Kiefer Sherwood brings more than enough of that on that line.
Yes.
Maybe he doesn't need to be that guy in order for them to produce. But I need to see him getting to some of those harder areas of the ice to try and score goals. And whether that's pucks bouncing off him because he's at the front of the net or, you know, whatever it takes, that's what I think is lacking from Jake DeBrusque's game right now. And I think he has it in him. I think he's capable of being that kind of player. But we haven't seen it yet in Vancouver. And again, maybe he doesn't need to be that player on that line. Maybe he needs to, like, if Sherwood's going to be the F1 and Pettersson's going to be, you know, the guy that finds spots for them to set him up, maybe DeBrusque just needs to be the F2 that retrieves the puck after Sherwood runs the defenseman through the end boards and then finds Pettersson for the goal. And if he can be that consistently, then that will help that line produce. But he also has the ability to be that scorer as well. And I think in order to get some of those goals, there needs to be a little bit more greasiness to his game.
Have you considered that maybe there's only a finite amount of FU and Sherwood's just hogging it all?
Well, I mean, he's on pace for what, like a million hits? Like this,
yes.
I cannot understand how he is able to play that way game in and game out. Because over the course of an 82-game season, I assume that you would just wear down from the toll of playing with that level of physicality in your game. And, you know, hopefully for the Canucks' sake, that doesn't happen to Sherwood because he's been way more impactful than I think any of us projected he would be to start the year. And, you know, I don't want to speak for you guys, but I really liked the signing anyway and thought he was going to come in and have a really good chance of being an important player for this team. And he's been that much better and that much more impactful than even I expected. So, you know, maybe he needs to spread the FU around for the rest of them just for self-preservation instincts and then, you know, for getting some of the other guys fired up as well.
Here's what stands out to me. DeBrusque has 3 goals on the season. All of them came in consecutive games on 1 road trip. On that road trip, 9 shots on goal. In the game since, 0 against Edmonton, 3 against Calgary, 0 against the Islanders, 1 against Chicago, 3 against Nashville, but then 2 again against the Rangers. It's just not enough shots.
Yeah.
There's just not enough going on.
No, and you know, maybe that's part of joining the Canucks system and figuring things out, because we've always said about the Canucks that they are not a volume shooting team. They've always been a quality over quantity team under Rick Tocchet. And that's kind of why their PDO was ridiculous to start last year, because they were, well, to a certain extent it was. Is that not fair?
No, it was that high because they scored on 40% of their unscreened wrist shots off the rush, whether you were an above average finisher or not, and like six goals deflected in off Sam Lafferty's butt. And do you remember that run of just like pucks that would settle randomly on a Canucks player's stick in the blue paint?
Yeah.
Like it was incredible. It was just incredible. The puck was just a magnet into the opposition's net. And that Senators game in early January was the epitome of it, where it was like multiple goals that the Canucks scored because they bounced off of stanchions.
Yeah, but that said, the basic point that I'm making, which is that they have not been a volume shooting team, I think is fair.
Yes.
Do you not agree?
Yeah. No, yeah. Of course.
So, you know, as Jake DeBrusk joins this new team and tries to get used to the system and the way that the coaches want them to play, you know, part of that is not volume shooting, or at least the way that they have played under Rick Tocchet to this point has been, don't just throw pucks to the net, keep possession, work the other team in the offensive zone, create your looks. I would imagine that maybe there's some room for him to grow in that regard in terms of understanding the way he needs to play to produce within this system. Because I don't have his shot total numbers from his past with the Bruins up in front of me, but I would guess that he probably shot the puck more in his time with Boston than he has with the Canucks. So, yeah, he's got to shoot the puck more, certainly.
Yeah, he's never had a shot rate this low 5-on-5 in his career, including as a rookie in 2017-18. Like, this is, he's two shots off his career average, basically.
So he needs to find the balance between, there's got to be a balance between, being a little bit more selective with your shooting, because that's the way this Canucks team wants to play, and they have had some success doing that. But also, you don't want to just shoot everything for the sake of shooting everything. So hopefully for his sake, he can simplify his game a little bit on the road, as I already talked about, get to some of those hard areas. And maybe if there's pucks that are magnetizing towards Canuck players' sticks, they can land on his stick in the crease if he's there and able to jam some of those home. But he needs to shoot the puck more to try and produce. But at the same time, it's not like you just want him firing pucks from everywhere just for the sake of getting shots on goal either.
Batch, you stepped up big time in this segment. We appreciate it. That was a good one. I enjoyed that. Thank you for doing this, man.
Thanks, boys. Have a good one. Talk to you later.
That is Brendan Batchelor, voice of the Canucks here on Sportsnet 650. I think that was the best game we've done with Batch in a long time. Liked that.
He mentioned,
I quite enjoyed it. I was entertained.
He mentioned to me at the rink. He came up. He was like, hey, you guys haven't like spun a silly game on me. And so then I was like thinking about it. Yeah, no, he gave me too much time to walk the seawall and come up with a private game that I could spring on him. But I thought throwing a TikTok wrinkle at him might.
I felt
might
like
make
I was watching
difficult.
Like Wheel of Fortune, and you know, you're like, oh, good play by that guy. You're like cheering along.
Wheel
like,
of Fortune.
This guy gets it.
You're like, man, he bought the right vowel at the right. Okay.
I don't know. I can't remember the last time I watched Wheel of Fortune.
Yeah, no, I mean,
what's a better example of a game show that where you would do that?
Who Wants to Be a Millionaire?
Yeah, but that's just like, did he get the right answer or not? There's no like strategy.
The only game shows I really watch are professional football.
Price is Right. Price is Right, I guess. Some
that's
of the
true.
When, the games when, have strategy.
Oh, man. You know what, though?
Or when you
I
do
always,
the $1 bid.
I hated the person. Well, the $1 bid I liked, but I hated when someone would take someone else's bid and go $1 over.
Why? That's awesome.
No. Hated that.
Why? No, why?
It's just not cool. It's not cool,
it's
man.
It's cool if you win.
I guess. But
everyone
then it,
knows the rules.
Then it felt like stolen valor.
No,
I hated
just go,
that.
Go compete.
Wow, you're in The Price is Right.
Yes. What are you talking about?
I'm just saying every time I saw that, I thought that is a person of low character. That is a person who goes to a party and everyone looks for an exit from every conversation.
That's
they're
a person who wants
them.
To win a new Kia hatchback, baby. That's what they want to do.
That is a person whose family doesn't forget to call them. They just don't.
Oh, I completely disagree. I'm surprised.
You might
against competing.
On The Price is Right?
Yeah, why do you go if not to compete?
Do you ever
Why do you show up?
Did you ever read the story of The Price is Right savant, the guy who like broke the game?
No, but that's amazing. I'm excited.
I'll send it to you. It's an incredible story. But there's a guy who had like spreadsheets and like broke the game, and there was like one huge winner who figured out that he'd broken the game and listened to him in
amazing.
The audience. And then finally he got into the show. It's an unbelievable, it's like a 30-year run where a guy influenced the course of Price is Right history.
What a legend.
You've never heard of this guy?
No.
Oh, man. It's if you're a big, like, I'm sick at home, I'm watching 8 hours of Price is Right kid, which I think everyone our age was, this is the story for you.
Brandon Vancouver said there's another level to it, which is you bid $2 over after, like, if you're not the last bid.
Oh, I hate it so much.
But you're screwing over the first person.
You know
so
what?
Don't you kind of like it?
You know what? Fundamentally, I think that I just want to see people get along on television and be good at their jobs. That's all I want to see on TV. That's why Brooklyn Nine-Nine is so genius.
Yes.
Because it's like, look at these people who are good at their jobs, but also complete idiots.
But
you
then you say you like
with.
Football. They don't get along.
What do you mean?
The players on the other opposite teams don't get along.
They always shake hands after the game.
Not always.
They hug. Sometimes there's drama. It's great.
Yeah, but
I don't want people to get along in sports.
You just said that's what you want
to see
on TV.
But they also all do. They all do, man. I don't know.
You
could
shake hands after The Price is Right. After you
overbid someone by $1, and then they're like going up to the stage,
hey,
and they're
game.
Like,
"Good game, man."
Yeah, and they're in their like bachelor party T-shirt, and the person like doesn't even dap them up. No, I hate that person. That person sucks.
Okay, we're going to take a break here. Lots more coming up.
Those are the types of people who still think that Jim Benning doesn't get enough credit.
we'll talk more about the upcoming Canucks 6-game road trip here. On the other side, it is Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. To Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. It's Jamie Dodd. It's Thomas Drance. We are coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of 5-star Google reviews. Sore feet. What are you waiting for?
So as everybody has commented in our inbox, the perfect bid, the contestant who knew too much about Ted Slauson is the documentary. And yeah, I read about it. I think I don't remember where I read it. Unfortunately, I wish I could. I think it was the.
It sounds like a like the Atlantic,
yeah,
or something. You know what I mean? Like a long read thing.
I think it was like IndieWire. Maybe I think I found it. No, I haven't. Anyway, there was a great long form piece of journalism about the guy that I found riveting once upon a time, and remembered that. But yeah, now I've got to watch The Perfect Bid.
There you go.
Yeah. It's called The Perfect Contestant. No, Perfect Bid, The Contestant Who Knew Too Much.
On Netflix, if you want to learn more about the guy who broke The Price is Right. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. We'll talk all things NHL with John Mattis at 1:30, but we got this segment open, and of course, as we were talking about with Batch, Canucks going out on this 6-game road trip. They'll start in Ottawa on Saturday against the Senators, against Travis Green and the Senators, some former Canucks as well, although we'll see if Travis Hamonic is in the lineup. I think he's going to get scratched tonight for the Ottawa Senators. But I want to pitch a question back to you that you posed to Batch, right? Which was, now Batch, we kind of tricked him, or you kind of tricked him to not having Elias Pettersson number one on his who needs to step up rankings for the Canucks on this road trip. But
nailed it.
But like, Pettersson's number one. we all know Pettersson is number one here, I think. I get the Garland thing. We could talk more about Garland, but, like, Pettersson's number one. And you asked him, I mean, like, well, how confident are you that he can do that? Not just that he can play well, right? Not just that he can be, like, a good first-line center for a team, but that he can be that superstar-level talent capable of going out and winning a team games. And, you know, I said to Batch, like, there's a lot of different reasons why you pay a guy $11.6 million over 8 years, right? You're doing it for the playoffs. You're doing it for big moments, but you're also doing it for stretches like these where the chips are down, where your team's, you know, been dealt a bit of a tough hand, and you need this guy to step up and carry you. This is the moment. This is one of those moments for Elias Pettersson. Now, saying that that's the expectation is a lot different than, you know, will he actually do it? But I'll flip the question around to you. I mean, what's your level of confidence that he has it in him, not just, you know, 3 months from now, but he has it in him starting on Saturday to be that player for the Canucks?
Yeah, and I think this is where we come to a point in the season where we're still gathering intel about the true talent level of a team. And I think if we're being honest with ourselves, we're still evaluating the true talent level of this group. Okay?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And in that context, I sort of spin how I think about a six-game road trip where the vibes are tough, the team is down a top six centerman of significant importance, really a top line forward who contributes in all aspects of the game and is this team's de facto or you know, team leader, emotional leader. We don't know when Besser will be back, although I think we expect now that maybe it's imminent-ish, imminent adjacent.
Sometime on this road trip, it sounds like.
Demko, maybe, I mean, I don't know, parsing his commentary, did it sound to you like he was going to debut on the road?
It sounded like there's a chance, yeah. But if I had to bet, I would bet at home.
Well, also, one thing to keep in mind is recovery for a goaltender on the road, right? If you're trying to come back in as controlled an environment as possible, being able to return at home, where you've got all the facilities and
you're not getting onto a plane 2 hours after the game ends or whatever. Yeah.
Sure, 2 hours.
What?
Way quicker than that. You know, the, yeah, you're not like racing around. It's not like post-game pizza and then post-game steak or whatever they've got on the plane for you. Maybe it's pre-made salad, but like, you know, you're sitting, even if you're sitting in, you know, the charter flights where you've got a first class seat, provided that you're not playing cards, it's just way more controlled from a rehab, from a, you know, mind your body, from a let's gather intel and be really deliberate about easing my way back in, especially given how many home games this team has in December.
Well, that's like the thing. It's worth noting. They come, like, they're going 6-6-6 here, right? They had the 6-game homestand, 6-game road trip. Then they've got a 6-game homestand on the other side,
right?
With no back-to-backs, right? Yeah. So that's a very controlled,
that
predictable environment on the other side of this trip.
Yeah, that looms large. So anyway, we'll see. But to sort of dial it back to what I'm saying, this to me is not one of those road trips where we should be looking at it and yelping and being like, oh, welp. But rather something we should be looking at with some enthusiasm, because we're going to learn a lot about a lot of different Canucks players, and a lot of different takes are about to be tested, and a lot of new opportunities are about to be given to guys who we've never seen in those opportunities. Max Sasson would be one of them, right? Getting a shot at the NHL level. But higher up the lineup, I think there's even bigger tests available to people. Like, I'm really fascinated and looking forward to seeing some of my, like, Connor Garland takes tested. Right, I've always insisted Garland can be a top-line caliber player who, because of his size, has usually been pigeonholed into a third-line role that he is far too capable for. Right? Well, guess what? Connor Garland's going to be one of the three top Canucks forwards in ice time.
Yep.
5-on-5 over the next few weeks. Like, no question about it. I mean, he's been that for much of the season anyway, but it's about to happen without the same level of help and support up front. I think he's going to kill it. I think he's going to absolutely kill it in that role. Not just because he's got the new dad strength.
Yes,
going,
which is huge.
Working in his
very
favor,
important here.
But also because he's he's really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
And the Pettersson factor to me is a fascinating one. And look, he did this availability on Tuesday after the Rangers game. And he was kind of drafted in because Garland ran to the hospital. Mm-hmm. Like, no, he wasn't originally asked for. But he came in and brought up his error on the game winner himself, was not asked about it, Well, he was eventually asked about it, but he brought it up prior to that.
Yep.
Asked to just sort of assess his game, took accountability for the mistake. I thought showed a little bit of rah-rah, was by far the most engaged in it, like availability that I've seen him do all season in a lot of ways. And I was just thinking to myself, like, you know, how many times Miller talks every day, man. Like every day he talks, he answers for the team after losses. There's nowhere to hide for Pettersson without Miller.
Yep.
Truly. Like
on the ice and off, as you're talking
about.
On the
ice and off.
Yep.
But that's all part of it. It's all part of the same package here. And I think that's good. Like, I think that's a good thing to happen to Pettersson. I think it's a good thing to happen to this team at this point in the season. You know, it would be very different if we were talking about the second round of the playoffs. We're not. We're talking about a late November road trip against a bunch of patsy Eastern Conference teams. Like, if this team is a great team, the parallel pass thing, if this team is a team with a chance to win, this is a moment where Pettersson should take over. This is a moment where Pettersson should be the most impactful player on the ice, not just in terms of controlling play or the five-on-five stuff or how he quarterbacks the power play or how many points he produces, but in terms of how he carries himself. I want to see that. And I brought this up on Halford and Brough earlier this morning, where I was thinking about in...
So that would have been prior to your Seawall walk, so you didn't have all the thoughts to get out yet.
Yeah, no. This was a thought I had last night.
I'm just trying to put the timeline together.
Dude, I'm always thinking.
I love that you were on the radio, 8 o'clock.
Yeah.
You have another radio show at noon. And in the interim, the intervening 3.5 hours,
I took my
these
dog
massive
for
thoughts were piling up. You're like, oh, I got to get these out.
I took my dog for a 7-kilometer seawall walk. It was beautiful. It was a nice day. Dude, when...
I'm not saying you were wrong to go for a walk. I just think it's funny that you're like, oh, where am I going to get these takes out? It's like, you were on at 8 a.m. and then again at noon.
When I get off the radio and it's a travel day for the Canucks and it's not raining, I'm immediately going on a long walk with my dog.
Forget about the long walk of your dog part. No one's criticizing that. That's not under scrutiny here. That's great.
It's a lovely time. He's a very good boy. Okay, Jamie?
Yes, okay. Anyways, you were saying on Halford and Brough this morning.
I was talking about the 29-10 Canucks. Because you remember, we knew the Canucks were good going into that season. Well, they'd made the second round.
Yeah.
But it wasn't actually until Daniel got hurt for 22 games, and Henrik Sedin went and was just like, I'm a goal scorer now, and went on this insane point-per-game clip on his way to winning an Art Ross and an MVP.
He won the heart, really, in that stretch.
Yeah. Well, he won the heart in that stretch, but he also, you know, set a pace for the Art Ross, and then, you know, they carried that through the next season as well, and all of a sudden it was like, oh, right, Crosby, Ovechkin, Henrik, and Daniel are the four most productive and impactful players in the league right now. And prior to that stretch, that hadn't been true. We thought of that team as a good team.
Mm-hmm.
We hadn't thought of them as a contender until that stretch and what Henrik did stepping up during it. I'm not comparing Henrik Sedin to Elias Pettersson. And I'm not comparing the situations, right? I don't think JT Miller is going to miss 22 games.
Sure.
But the point is we learned something about that group then that we hadn't known before, right? That group showed us something, and the best players on that team showed us something that we hadn't known about them previously. And there is that opportunity for Pettersson here. Like, that opportunity knocks now. And I'm just curious to see how he steps up and handles it, especially because I've been so flummoxed by some of his form and some of his dealings with the media and with me personally over the early part of the season. You know, when I first got here, man, 2019, and first met Elias in Victoria, the very first day of Canucks training camp, they do the Travis Green 40 skate, and he's blasting it. It's like his group is like, I think you started out on a line with Ferland and Besser. And Myers was in his group. And who did they start with Myers that year? I don't know. One of the lefties.
I don't know.
Well, it was Hughes Tanev. It was Myers and...
Adler?
Yeah, that's exactly who it was. Yeah. So you could not be with a more veteran established group, right? Incoming top UFA and Myers, Adler, like team mainstay. And usually when you do the 40 skate, veteran players like skate in a pack. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? You're not trying to embarrass anybody.
Yeah.
Pettersson just blasted the group. Destroyed it. Lengths and lengths in front of everybody. And I was just like, who is this guy? This is unbelievable. And then he went out and he scored like a Forsberg goal in the scrimmage. Everything he did looked to me like alpha stuff. Like, this is my team. In just his second season.
Mm-hmm.
And I was blown away. Remember, at the time, like, I just finished working for 3 years with Sasha Barkov, who internally, it was like, man, this guy's the best player in the league. But is he too nice? Is he Batman? And I was like, this guy's got it. This guy's got it. And so to sort of follow his career trajectory from that point, especially with what we saw like in the playoffs all throughout that season, like there was like a full 18 months where nothing I saw from this guy convinced me of anything other than this guy might be Batman.
Mm.
And then things sort of have shifted a little bit. And look, we all grow up and our priorities change, and he stopped sharing stuff on social media, and he had the injury, and then he struggled, and you know, there's been a lot of sort of contours. Then he bounced back and was unbelievable again. And
but also part of that is, I think, like Quinn Hughes developing as a leader, finding 100%. His voice. He's the captain.
That was his first NHL training camp. It was JT Miller's first Canucks training
camp. JT Miller finding his voice and growing as a veteran leader and becoming, you know, the heart and soul
man.
Of the team.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
I mean, there's no question who's Batman on this team.
Yeah.
Right? And so it's sort of within that context that I'm just like, I know it's there. I know it's there. We haven't seen it in a long time, but I know it's there. And I'm just curious to see if this is a moment where it comes out, because if this team is the contender that its fans want it to be, right? And I'm convinced that it's a good team with a high floor, and I think they'll be able to tread water in Miller's absence at the very least, and I think there's a chance they do even better than that. But am I as convinced or... you know, am I buying stock in this team's ceiling case as a contender the way this market has over the last 18 months? I think it's fair to say I haven't, right? And I'm not. But I'm willing to be convinced. And I actually think this road trip and what we get from Pettersson could go a long way toward changing what we think of this team's ability at its absolute apex to do more than be good. Right? To have a chance to be great. A great team here, in my opinion, is actually able to seize this opportunity, is actually going to show us some impressive stuff, especially against soft comp on the road with few distractions, right? In this environment.
And I think the Henrik Sedin comp to his Hart trophy winning season is a really good one, right? That stands out in Canucks history, because if you were following the team at the time, I mean, there were major, major questions about what that was going to look like, right? Because it was so established that, well, Henrik passes to Daniel, and then Daniel scores. Henrik doesn't really score. And then, as you said, not only did he step up in his production, but he changed the way he played for that stretch, was able to rack up points, help the team win, and just be one of the best players in the league, and he ends up winning the Hart Trophy. I think the Canucks comparison is a good one, but even just think about in recent NHL history, right? Like what Leon Draisaitl can do when Connor McDavid is out of the lineup in Edmonton, right? You know, what Nathan MacKinnon can do in Colorado when some of their other top players are out of the lineup. We see it consistently with some of the top players around the league. Yes, to be at their absolute best, for those teams to be at their absolute best, they need the multiple stars. But those guys can do it. Those guys can carry the mail for at least a stretch without the other top guys on the team. So this is a chance for Elias Pettersson to show that he's in that category, to show that 11.6 is not overpaying for him because he has that capability. It's a big jump from where he's been, but I do think the fact that he had a strong game against the Rangers, with the one exception of that game-winning goal, but he had a strong game, as you said, he talked to the media, his vibe was striking the right notes. I think he's at least put himself in a position to take that next jump, right, from where he is to where he needs to be on this road trip. And man, it would be a sight for sore eyes for Canucks fans if he's able to do that on this road trip. The other thing I just wanted to throw out there, too, that is a little surprising we haven't talked about when we're talking about, okay, how are they going to hold the fort? Who needs to step up, all of those things. But is the situation in the crease, right? And a lot of that has been focused on, will they get Thatcher Demko back? We'll see if he ends up playing on this road trip, but it doesn't sound like it's going to be a lot of games on this road trip. If he does get in for one, maybe the following homestand makes more sense. But, you know, what's one thing that can really bail out a team that's struggling, that has some difficulties up front, that, you know, is missing some players? It's really good goaltending performance, right? And Archer Shelov's, we didn't really talk about it after the Rangers performance. There was a lot going on, but, you know, I thought it's the kind of thing where it's like, okay, you look and he gives up four goals and the stats aren't that great, but I thought it was still a meaningfully strong performance from Shelov's, and
he was good. The Canucks gave up a lot of scoring chances.
Yeah, like, and I know some people are pointing like, he's losing his net still and all those things, but he also made a lot of really good saves. So I think the goalies and the goalie duo, and especially if it is more of a straight timeshare again, if Shelov's is stepping up a little bit and Lankinen is maybe falling back to his career levels a little bit, I mean, I think the goaltending is going to have a big role to play in holding the fort, in allowing the guys like Pettersson and Garland up front to be in a position to win games for this team on this road trip.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think you bring up sort of an interesting point when we think about sort of where this season's going.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, sometimes that happens. Sometimes I'm just like,
correct,
right? And then I finish, and then you're not ready.
That's
for
all right.
Me. I'm sorry.
We're good.
I think you're just used to me being like, well, I guess Durant is going to talk for 10 minutes uninterrupted here.
No.
You're just waiting for me to do the Al Pacino.
That's right.
My whole life.
No, I've got a good kicker here that came across my feed during this segment. We don't usually talk politics on this show, but this has a Canucks tie-in, don't worry. Rob Williams from the Daily Hive tweeted this out. An interview or an article about Vancouver Mayor Ken Sim in that publication, I believe with Kenneth Chan in the Daily Hive. Here's the quote from Vancouver Mayor Ken Sim. As a fan, I want to see the Canucks have an exciting run and make it to the Stanley Cup Finals, hopefully win in Game 7 overtime.
Now that sounds like a lot of high blood pressure around the city of Vancouver, Mayor Ken Sim.
As the mayor of Vancouver, I do not want them to play a single game in the playoffs because the stress that it causes for safety.
Well, he adds that another trip to the Stanley Cup final will, the cost of that for the city itself would be in the millions of dollar range, like millions of dollars on public safety initiatives if the Canucks make it to the playoffs, period.
Make
it to the finals.
I have never seen an elected official come out and publicly state, I do not want my hometown team to make it to the playoffs. As a matter of my official stance as mayor is I am against the Canucks making the playoffs. That's incredible. That is an all-time quote. I'm so tickled by that. Normally, it's like, hey, I'm making the bet with the mayor of the city they're going against. Rah, rah, we're all in. You know, this is Canucks town. Today's Canucks day in Vancouver. Ken Sim, no. Don't want it. Don't care for it. Not interested in it. No, thank you, guys. I hope they flame out this year and miss the playoffs. That's from Vancouver mayor Ken Sim. That's amazing. I'm just flabbergasted. I've never seen anything like it.
Geez, a platform I can get behind.
They're gonna do polling on this. It was like 99% disagreed with this sentiment. But there was one guy who's really in favor of it. Like, I love it. Oh man. Anyways, I wanted to pass that along because that is absolutely incredible. And I don't really have anything to say about it other than that's an interesting tactic. Interesting tactic from our mayor, Ken Sim.
No, but I mean, I think we all understand that there are a variety of spillover costs to the city of accommodating the Vancouver Canucks. Huge spillover benefits.
So, like, even if we're just breaking it down to, like, economic self-interest, it's, like, it's still better.
For sure. But also, like, you know, for years, 15 years later, you know, Seth Rogen's giving David Chang a tour of the city of Vancouver and they're like going back and forth with Canucks PR on what B-roll of the Canucks riot they can use in explaining some of the nuances and eccentricities of the city. Like, you know, Vancouver fans being who we are, the madcap hockey market that is very much part of this city's identity for better or for worse.
Absolutely.
But I love it personally. But that's because, you know, much like famed Batman supervillain Bane. I was born in the darkness.
But you know, like, the mayor of Philadelphia is not like, I want the Eagles to lose so nobody climbs up any lampposts in our city, right?
No, but that's not, he's, as a fan, I'd love it.
I know.
As the mayor, I make sure those lampposts are greased to the hilt.
Extremely greased. All right, we'll take a break. John Mattis from The Score. We'll take a trip around the NHL with him coming up next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. It's Jamie Dodd. It's Thomas Drance. We're live from the Kintech studio. 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. The Bridge Street Dunbar Lumber and Ladder has moved to Progress Way in Tilbury's Industrial Park. More room, more product, more awesome. Details at DunbarLumber.com. Now joining us to talk about some of the big stories around the NHL right now, and there's a lot going on that's pretty interesting. From The Score, he is the senior NHL writer there. He is John Mattis. John, thank you for doing this with us today. How are you?
I'm good, fellas. How are you guys doing?
We're doing very well. So I want to start with one of the big stories of the week, which is, of course, Boston letting go head coach Jim Montgomery. And you know, I find the most interesting element of this is not so much Boston's season and can they turn it around under Joe Sacco and all of that. But, you know, one of the things that's gotten a lot of play and discussion since the firing is you go back to just 18 months ago, 2023, the Jack Adams nominees, and it was Jim Montgomery, Dave Hackstall, Lindy Ruff, all of them in the intervening 18 months let go by their teams. And you look at Jim Montgomery's record in his time in Boston, obviously it's incredible. And on the one hand, I understand why teams are quick to change coaches, right? Because we see it work. We see the new coach bump pay dividends for teams and get their, you know, turn their season around and get them into the playoffs. Has the quick trigger in your eyes maybe gone a little bit too far in the NHL and teams are too quick to look at the coach and change the coach before considering other options?
Oh, that's a good point or a good question. Maybe it's gone too far. I mean, it seems like the shelf life on these coaches has gotten shorter and shorter. And I think what it ultimately comes down to is that GMs sit there and go, this season's a disaster. I don't know what's going to happen here. The media's on me. The fans are on me. What do I do? And it becomes, you know, option A, B, or C, you know, fire himself, which is never going to happen.
Yeah.
Trade all the players. That's never going to happen. So fire the coach, option C. Makes the most sense. And that's not certainly a new development, but it's kind of just the default move when things have gone so sideways. And Boston's a pretty good example of that. Like, I think this is one of those things where it's like, it's both a dumb decision and a smart decision. Like, it's dumb because it's like, okay, who's the better coach out there? Who's the savior coming in? And hey, can Jim Montgomery get better goaltending and better centers? And then we'll sort of discuss his job or his performance. But then it's a smart decision in some respect, because you look under the hood, the underlying numbers aren't great. Okay, that at least is somewhat Montgomery's fault. There's an onus there for the coach. And then also, as I mentioned before, and as you hinted, like, something has to happen to save the season, or at least stop the snowball and you know, kind of turn the page and get people talking about something else. And, you know, it's a card that GMs can play, and they've been playing it pretty frequently these days.
Yep.
We often talk about records when a coach gets fired. I mean, did you think that Montgomery was doing a good job in Boston? Was this one that, you know, you described it as a dumb decision that also wasn't, but just your general gut reaction, was this uncalled for in Boston's case?
I mean, I think they could have probably waited longer. I think they could have stuck by him a little longer here. I guess the one thing, though, if you're Don Sweeney and Cam Neely, that you can point to as far as this not just being a knee-jerk reaction is the playoff results. I mean, he's had tremendous success in the regular season before this debacle. But in the playoffs, I mean, pretty blah results, one series win, and it was over the Leafs last year in, you know, game seven when Pasternak had that that overtime goal. It was kind of a fluky situation with how the Leafs played that. So it was like he could have gone two full postseasons without a series win while doing so well in the regular season. So his inability to adjust in the playoffs, I'm sure, factored into this. And I don't know. Like it's, you know, some of the reporting around it, you know, raises a couple eyebrows in terms of, and I'm not sure if it's speculation, if it's based in fact, but the fact that, you know, he was on an expiring contract and it seemed like Sacco was kind of given a heads up on the side that maybe, you know, this team would be turned over to you at some point during the season. Like that's a little, if it's true, a little, I guess, bad faith acting on the part of the front office. And you know, I'm kind of speculating here, maybe a little recklessly, but yeah, it seems a little early to be, you know, showing Jim Montgomery the door, given he wasn't this sort of like rookie head coach that was completely in over his skis. You know, he did try to motivate these players in different ways through the media. We saw him getting into it with Brad Marchand. Like, I don't know. There's a lot of problems in Boston, and he's not the only one, I guess, could be the way to sum it up.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Now, as we talk about the quick trigger that NHL teams have when it comes to firing their coach, do you have kind of a hunch of who might be next on the hot seat? If you had to, and hey, we're talking Jack Adams nominees. Andrew Brunette was one just last year. Nashville not off to a great start. Maybe that's it. Maybe it's somewhere else. But if you're looking around the league, do you think does another candidate jump out as kind of the next to potentially lose their job?
Well, let me talk about Brunette first. I don't think he will be next, but I think that it's a bit of a slippery slope there in Nashville. Like, I think, you know, he's so far shown well overall since joining the Predators and, you know, bringing this sort of modern approach to offensive hockey and what they're doing there. Obviously this year has been, you know, a disaster in many respects. So if things don't turn around soon, I mean, you'd think that Barry Trotz starts considering a midseason change. And I don't know if you guys saw, but last night, the Predators were assessed a penalty yep. right at the beginning of the game because of their lineup card wasn't matching what was actually on the ice. Like, that's a complete, you know, that's next level, not really poor coaching, but poor detail is, I guess, attention to detail. So, you know, that type of stuff will eat at a GM and we'll have them thinking. But I think Brunette's got a longer leash than maybe some across the league, given he was hired not that long ago and has some success. I think Derek Lalonde is the actual answer to this question, and there's just been a lack of improvement in Detroit. And don't get me wrong, I think that a lot of it is roster construction. But Lalonde doesn't exactly scream like tactical wizard or some guy that's really it's all on the roster. Like, I feel like he's deployed players strangely. I think that he's, you know, especially this season, it's pretty obvious that there's an opening in the Atlantic Division that Detroit is not hopping into. And Lalonde's part of the problem there. So I think that he's an easy one for the GM there, Steve Yzerman, to pull the trigger on sooner than later. And they just had a bad trip in California, and that's never good when you go down there these days when the teams aren't very good and have a poor showing. So Lalonde really comes to mind because even, you know, some people like to bring up Mike Sullivan. I feel like he's more of an off-season firing. Yeah. I think that, like, that team is in such disarray generally speaking, and he's so highly thought of, you know, highly.
Yeah, he's part of management,
also,
really, right?
Yeah,
like, he's not a typical
coach.
No,
exactly. And he has this extension that's keeping him around. So I feel like Mike Sullivan's probably, you know, gonna keep his job till at least the end of the season. So Lalonde is the guy that I really circle and go, you know, he's got to be looking over his shoulder at this point.
John, the Canucks have an East Coast swing coming up through Ottawa, Boston, Pittsburgh, Buffalo, Detroit. It is not exactly a who's who of top teams in the East. As a resident in the Eastern time zone, what can you tell Canucks fans about this upcoming slate of Canucks opponents?
I mean, I think there's some winnable games there. Like, as I mentioned there with Detroit, the Atlantic's been pretty interesting where Toronto's roughly done what's been expected. As you know, they might be playing mm-hmm. differently, but they're hanging at the top of the division with Florida as expected. Tampa's been you know, a work in progress as far as the, you know, just what they're always dealing with this top heavy lineup and trying to eke out wins with some players that probably shouldn't be in the NHL that are on their fourth line and third pair. But they're fine. And then from there, though, it gets real dicey. I mean, like the Sabres, similar to the Red Wings, like there's an opening there. There's a path. Walk down that path to the playoffs for the first time in forever. And right now they technically are holding a spot. But the thing with the Sabres is that they can never string together more than two wins. Like I'm talking, they haven't had a three-game winning streak in a long time. And I might be, you know, exaggerating a little bit, but it's pretty bad where they can't seem to put it all together. And going from there, I think that Ottawa's actually looked better than their record suggests. They have pretty good underlying numbers. They, you know, could use a save from Linus Allmark. And Travis Green has been a nice fit there overall. So it's a bit of a mishmash out east right now. And, you know, if you look across the league at large, you've got, you know, maybe like one spot up for grabs in the east now. Yeah. Like the top seven seem almost solidified, which is crazy to say a quarter into the season, but, and, you know, may be proven to be wrong. But, like, there's a big gap from the top seven to the rest of the conference. And, you know, the West has a bit of a have and have not situation going on too. And maybe that's just, you know, a general trend in the NHL. But yeah, the Canucks can come out east and grab, you know, at least half of the points that are available there.
Yeah, it's wild how quickly things seem to get settled in the playoff race, right? Because I think you're bang on about the seven spots pretty much being taken in the Eastern Conference. And, you know, it's wild when you think about what that means for, you know, the teams like Buffalo, Detroit, Ottawa that are perennially trying to take that jump to the playoffs. Ottawa is pretty interesting. As you said, you know, maybe they're actually a little bit better than their record shows. And of course, for Canucks fans, first time going up against a Travis Green head coached team since he was let go here. What has made him a decent fit so far in Ottawa?
Well, I think honestly, like the bar was pretty low as far as
sure.
implementing some kind of structure and just bringing, I don't know, a little bit of a, for lack of a better way to put it, like a little bit of a whip to what they're doing. Like, the word out of Ottawa over the last couple of years has been, you know, a bit of a country club atmosphere, which is crazy to say for a team that has done nothing with this current core. Like, that's the last thing you want to hear. It's fine if that's coming out of, I don't know, Tampa Bay because they've won. So I think that, you know, kind of presence alone it's been positive to have Travis Green there. And I think that he's, you know, I don't know, he's deployed his players better than I thought that he would up front. And, you know, he's, you know, a guy like Jake Sanderson has really, you know, solidified himself as a top pair guy, as someone who can carry a shutdown pair. So it's coming together a little bit if you watch them and sort of think about their process and their timeline. It's just the wins haven't been there and, you know, Allmark hasn't played up to his contract. So, you know, it's like if you're a Sens fan, you're pretty disappointed with the results so far. But I feel like if we're looking across the league, they're also one of those teams that in the back three quarters of the season, I feel like have a pretty high ceiling and have some real potential here to go on a run.
Yeah, they've at least put themselves in a position to stay in the playoff race, which even like for Ottawa, that's progress, right? That's a step forward from where
exactly.
they've been in recent seasons. They're not completely out of it just yet in November. I wanted to ask you about the Pacific Division as a whole a little bit as well, right? Because, you know, out here, so much of the conversation is the Canucks kind of scuffling to start the season, especially at home. And now they're missing JT Miller. Besser's still out of the lineup. Demko's still out of the lineup. Are they going to lose touch? But you look up and like the last 10 games for almost every team in the division is they're right around 500. Vegas loses to Toronto last night. LA loses to Buffalo last night. I think we all expect Edmonton to have a really, really good record at some point. But beyond that, is the Pacific Division maybe just not that inspiring this year?
Yeah, I think coming into the season, it was one of those divisions where you go, I like the top three, and then it gets real dicey from
yep.
there. And, you know, right now there's only three teams with a positive goal differential. It's Vegas plus 12, the Kings plus 5, and Seattle plus 3. Those aren't quite all the three ones that I would have picked. I guess Vegas and LA I would have picked. But The fact that Edmonton's not in there and Vancouver isn't in there is a little surprising. The way I see it, it all sort of breaking down is, you know, Anaheim and San Jose, kind of as expected. Same with Seattle. You know, Seattle's very mid, and I think that's fair for their talent level. Vancouver's kind of come back to earth a little bit from last year, and, you know, they have multiple stars that are dealing with issues, whether it's Pettersson and his production, Miller and what's going on personally, and you mentioned Demko. Like, you can kind of explain away their record at this point. And then you've got Calgary, overachieving, but showing some cracks, right? That I think no one's fooled by their start, but props to them for being competitive with a roster that is pretty underwhelming. And then, you know, LA is kind of what we thought they'd be, third in the Pacific or in the wild card. I think that's where they'll end up. I don't think that their ceiling is very high. Just a quality NHL team that is probably going to lose in the first round. And then, you know, Edmonton, we're waiting for them to go on that, you know, 10-game run.
Yeah.
Or for McDavid to continue to ascend and really get back into form. And obviously he hasn't been bad this year. I'm not overly worried about them. You know, when you have McDavid and Draisaitl at the peak of their powers, I just think that the sky's the limit with that team. And then you get up to Vegas, and I think that they're honestly a bit of a sleeping giant league-wide. You mentioned the Toronto game wasn't the greatest showing last night, but I think generally speaking, there's at least another gear with this team, probably two, and they're the only team in the Pacific that's in the top 10 in points percentage across the league right now, which is kind of wild, and they're ninth. Like, it's really crazy what's happened with the Pacific in terms of things being a little upside down.
Yeah.
But all that said, I think that Vegas and Edmonton are still top-tier contenders.
Canucks wrap up this road stand against the Minnesota Wild. They're off to a great start to the season. Of course, a huge part of that is the production and the play from Kirill Kaprizov. Is he the Hart Trophy leader right now? I know it's early, but has he been the best player in the league for you so far, John?
I mean, I think so, and I think it's not even that close, to be honest. Like, if we're talking MVP, most valuable to your team, like, what he's doing for the Wild is pretty ridiculous. I mean, you know, he's 1 point behind McKinnon for the league lead. He's, you know, leading in primary points, even strength points. He's got 14 more points than any teammate, and that would be Matt Boldy. His ice time's up there in terms of 22 minutes a night and spread across all situations. He's a crazy stat is that he's recorded more three-point nights than pointless nights.
That's wild.
Six times he's gotten 3 points. Three times he's been shut out. That's pretty crazy. And I just think that he's like a really interesting player, very unique as far as him being this mix of power and grace. Like, he's incredibly skilled and crafty, but he's super powerful with that lower body, that, you know, kind of Sidney Crosby-esque lower body. And he's really good defensively. He's a dual threat as far as being a scorer and being a playmaker. You know, he's clutch. He's unreal in transition as far as entries and exits. Like, the guy really brings everything to the table. And I feel like he's been doing some version of this in previous seasons and even has a 100-point season under his belt. But there's something about this season and, you know, the inevitability of what he's been doing night to night that brings him right at the top of my list for Hart Trophy candidates. And it's early, et cetera. But the thing is that the Wild are – one of those teams where Kaprizov is, in my opinion, above and beyond their best player. Like, yeah. I love Faber, I love Boldy, a couple of their other players, but he's their superstar. So he's got a good chance here if he can continue at least putting up similar production and similar impacts defensively over the rest of the season to be at that top of that list, especially if, you know, McDavid doesn't go on some run or Matthews doesn't come back and do something special. Like, It's there for his taking.
John, great stuff, man. Really appreciate it. And hopefully we chat again soon.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys.
Thanks, John.
That is John Mattis, a senior NHL writer for The Score, weighing in on some of the Canucks opponents coming up on this road trip, some other things going on around the NHL as well. And yeah, Kaprizov has been just a monster for the Wild. It's going to be interesting and fun to watch him against the Canucks. I know Canucks fans will be hoping he doesn't go off, but always fun to watch an elite player at their peak. The other fascinating thing with Kaprizov, too, is, you know, he's eligible for an extension on July 1st, just the 1 year left after this one on his current deal. And with the rumblings about the salary cap spike and all of that, I mean, he could be one of the players in a position to really reset star level salary structure around the NHL.
What did you make of Gary Bettman, by the way, pushing back on the reports?
It's Gary Bettman. But also, didn't he phrase it like, well, we haven't talked about that at all, which, like, and then Friedman, I think today was like, yeah, I know. But what I'm saying is they're going to talk about it. You know what I mean? It's like the facts are, if the revenue is whatever, X, then they're going to have a choice of either smoothing or not smoothing. You know what I mean?
For sure.
So the fact that they haven't talked about that choice yet doesn't mean that they're not going to.
We all know that, you know what I mean? We all know that Friedman's info on something like that's bulletproof. We know he's not talking out of school.
No.
That's sort of not
but
what I mean.
It's just Bettman doesn't want to.
I think Bettman's been burned too many times predicting the salary cap with high numbers that then, like, the league is still not at the level that that Bill Daly said they might get to in March of 2020.
Mm-hmm. Well timed.
Yeah, it was March 6th, 2020. The cap might go to $88 million. We're still not there.
Oh, man.
Where are we? We're at 88.
It's 88 million.
Okay, well, we got there. We got there 4 years later.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, no, and I don't, like, there's no reason for Gary Bettman to be like, yeah, I think we are, you know what I mean? Like, what does he gain by saying, yes, I think it's going to happen?
To this day, one of my spookiest takes was I wrote, like, an Armies that night and said, you know, take these with a grain of salt. Who knows what could happen? Like, and I listed a bunch of things and then said, or a revenue sapping pandemic.
Those are innocent times.
Spooky.
Innocent times.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I don't make a lot of it. Like, again, I think he's playing it cautious, playing it close to the vest.
Yeah, I think they've just been burned too many. I like that. I appreciate that the league has finally been like, oh, right. You know, like, let's see what happens. I mean, we could absolutely.
A part of me does kind of want to see just the spike for the chaos. Like, don't smooth it. Just go with the spike. But that's, I get why all the reasons they wouldn't. Because, you know, the other thing is, you always talk about who's going to be the Timothy Mozgov, right? Which team is going to be the Golden State Warriors who are able to add Kevin Durant because of the spike? Like, that's the interesting angle, too,
well,
right?
There's no Kevin Durant on them. Mitch Marner.
But it's also 2 years from now, right? Like, what if Kirill Kaprizov?
Right.
He's got, what if the spike happens in the summer of 2026 and he's a UFA?
Kirill Kaprizov joins the New York Rangers?
Yeah,
or
the Colorado Avalanche or the Edmonton Oilers or whatever. You know what I mean?
That'd be nasty.
But that's like the equivalent of what we're talking about.
I mean, good. Let's be real. Good. Hockey is cool. Hockey is so cool when there's at least a couple teams rolling out like
ridiculous lineups.
10 all-stars.
Yeah.
You know, because I think we, the hard cap era has always necessitated this like two stars and a grinder on your top line sort of thing. But we forget like what it used to look like with Detroit, for example, right? Mm-hmm. And it's just so beautiful the way that there's almost like an exponential impact of adding greatness on top of greatness on top of greatness, especially in hockey. It's let's hope that comes back. But yeah, I mean, look, Canadian dollar, even just like the last month is down 3 cents. Could go further, right? Mm-hmm. It all depends on sort of oil reserves. That could have a huge impact if it happens even before the playoffs on next year's cap. So I think playing it cautious is good on the league.
There's your currency futures update from Canucks Talk. We'll leave it on that note. We'll be back for a big Friday edition of the show tomorrow here on Sportsnet 650.